The Holy Gospel for today is taken from the second chapter of the Gospel of John. The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple, both the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those who were selling the doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my Father's house a marketplace." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The Jews then also said to him, "What sign can you show us for doing this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Jews then said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you will raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. This is the gospel of the Lord. And speaking of how God's love takes root and grows and blossoms in our lives, we are delighted to have Kali with us this morning to share her reflections on how she is blossoming and growing in God's love. Thank you, Kali. Welcome. Welcome home.
It's good to be back. Okay, so I've got all my papers here. For those of you who don't already know and have in Catholic school, which means that I'm required to take theology and philosophy regardless of my personal religious views. Luckily for me, I don't consider this to be such a bad thing. The classes have pushed me to familiarize myself with God and advocate for my beliefs, which is why this Lent I have chosen to fast from my silence, chosen to share the gospel, chosen to address this God that's such a huge aspect of my life. And I would like to thank you all, especially Pastors Beth and Eric, for allowing me to take over the sermon this week, and also for waking up early. I promise I attempted to relate this sermon to the passages from today's readings, but if I'm being totally honest here, I did my own thing. As I typed this up, many concepts appeared on paper, but I guess you could call the theme revelation. The opening of eyes, the clearing of dust, the aha moments that bring us closer to our faith. So here it goes. There once was a woman whose story was recorded in the Bible because she was accused of adultery. I'm sure you remember her. I'm not even 100% sure that she committed this crime, but boy, was that crowd ready to do her justice. Everyone was preparing to stone her when Jesus said, "Let he who has not sinned cast the first stone." And no one was able to do so because they had all sinned at some point, if not many times in their lives. This is a prime example of revelation. The poor woman who was awaiting her death has now experienced grace, love, and forgiveness. Jesus never condoned or excused the sin. In fact, he told the woman to go and to never sin again. Father Gregory Boyle tells us in his book, Tattoos on the Heart, that Jesus as God is just too busy loving us to have any time left for disappointment. And there is a vastness in knowing that you're a son or daughter worth having. This made the woman's relationship with God change as she realized that she is a beloved child of God. The rule was always there, which made the action of forgiveness even more meaningful. If I were in the place of this woman, I would be on my hands and knees in awe. This woman went through a near-death experience and surveyed her neighbors, uncomfortably dropping their weapons. She watched the crowd show compassion through the understanding that they are all in need of forgiveness. And this woman experienced revelation as she was given a second chance to change her ways, a moment to reflect on her personal behavior. But this moment, this process, was not singularly influencing the victim. Everyone was affected. The crowd had a moment of revelation as well. Originally, they were so caught up in their own anger and hunger for justice that they failed to see their own sins. In fact, it wasn't until Jesus made them question their state of being that they were able to remove a veil and realize that they were just as sinful as the woman that they were about to kill. If that woman was stoned that day, everyone should have been stoned, because we are not sinless creatures. As much as we may attempt flawlessness. And so I bring up a part of Psalm 19. But who can discern their own errors? Forgive my hidden faults. We are all in need of God's grace, and we are so incredibly lucky to be receivers of his love. As stated in 1 Corinthians, for the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. Speaking of human weakness and foolishness, high school holds drama. That is a fact of life that even I, the robot building, woodworking musician, could not avoid. And there were people in my high school that drew drama in like a vacuum or a magnet or some mad force of nature. But as common nerd protocol, soap opera characters were to be avoided at all costs. On a day-to-day basis, I was fairly successful with this task. I hung with a respectable crew. But one day, I walked in through the front door of our home, and I said, Mom, I just can't take it anymore. There's this girl that's so annoying, rude, and offensive. I don't want to see or even be around her ever again. This chick would get in my face. I was ready to give this girl a piece of my mind. I was ready to show her the attitude that she had repeatedly given me. I was ready for justice. Ready to cast that first stone. And what did my mom say to me? She told me to treat this like a life lesson. She told me to follow the golden rule. The golden rule. Treat others how you want to be treated. That phrase is my childhood. That phrase was drilled into my head the second that I could understand words. It's not like I've forgotten about it, but Mom, don't you think that this is a little bigger than that? I'm looking for justice here, not the quote on our refrigerator door. But my mom told me to take every quality that bothered me about this girl and to eliminate them from my own habits. Sound familiar? It was time for me to reflect on my own sins. Time for me to drop my stone and treat that girl with as much respect as I demanded, if not more. I mean, as if I've never shown even the slightest bit of attitude. My parents know better than that. In fact, my sister could tell you about all my sass. But thank goodness for them. My mom told me to reflect on why this girl might act the way she does, regardless of how justified her actions are. And because I, for that second, had to force myself into her shoes, I became self-aware. Any time that I feel warranted to act in a similarly negative way as her, I am immediately reminded of how unattractive that is. And I'm grateful, because had I not felt the wrath of this disrespectful teenager, I might not have learned what it's like to be on the receiving end of that. I might not have figured out that that's not how I want to portray myself, that that's not how I want to live or be. So how should we be living? You've got Exodus, the Ten Commandments, to start, but there's also this mystery aspect of life that we all have to deal with, and I find it quite beautiful. Life is valuable in the same way that faith is valuable, because both call us to go through the motions and hope for the best. It is a natural mindset of human beings to believe that a difficult process is worth the effort in the end. And why would we be created with such irrational optimism if our Creator had no intention of breathing eternal life in us? There's a song that I hold dear called Awake My Soul by the band Mumford and Sons. In the lyrics they sing, for you were made to meet your maker. You were made to meet your maker. I have a beautiful analogy for you. It's going to seem a little silly and simple at first, but bear with me. I think it's important. I call it the moon and finger analogy. There's actually a Buddhist koan about this, but basically, if I were outside with Beth and I wanted to show her the moon, then I might say, look at the moon, and point with my finger. The hope is that Beth would see the moon and all of its gloriousness and be able to cherish that with me. The moon represents God. A common mistake today is to be pointed in the direction of God, but to get caught up in the finger and never see the moon. The finger could represent a variety of things, but I find it most effectively represents religion. Christians get caught looking at the finger instead of the moon all the time. Yes, even us. By this, I mean, there gets to be a point where we're all focused on our identity as Christians instead of being a follower of Christ. Instead of taking that moment to drop all of our stones and remember that we are sinners basking in God's grace. Now, I keep bringing up this word revelation. The Latin word for revelation, revelare, literally translates to mean removing veils. This idea was exposed to me in my theology class as students took turns holding veils in front of their faces, dropping a veil every time they answered a personal question. Every drop of a veil brought me the slightest bit closer to my peers as I came to understand them better and to conceptualize what I believed to be true about them. Just as religion is a response to revelation, my theories and beliefs developed as I came to know the traits of my peers. Before I could even process this next step, my professor had invited God into our classroom. I became overjoyed with the idea that I could speak with my Creator. Go ahead, he announced. Ask God any question that you might want to know the answer to. Immediately, my head spun with ideas. Frantically, I reached for the most imperative and notable queries. Why did you make us? Are we making you proud? Is curiosity a positive or a negative trait? Of course, these things could not be answered at the time, but if they had, who would the veil be lifted off of? Certainly more of God would be exposed to me, but God wouldn't have changed. Only my understanding of God would have changed. Therefore, the veils are really being lifted from my own eyes. Father Gregory Boyle reiterates this beautifully in his book, saying that each tiny conception gets obliterated as we discover more and more the God who is always greater. And John Shea tells us that faith is not believing in something that you cannot see, but responding to something which you cannot deny. And that response is made in reaction to revelation. I have experienced many moments of revelation in the 19 years that I have occupied this planet, and I can say so with confidence because revelation is not only a moment, but a process that affects all areas of life and all relationships. As I grow, I am living a process. My life is a process. I'm currently experiencing countless moments of incentive that challenge each of my paradigms and values. Everyone makes mistakes. This is a well-known fact derived from human nature, an unfortunately unchangeable truth. However, the range of expense between each flawed decision is quite broad, so I would suggest making the most out of every fault. One thing my father would always tell me is that there are two respective categories for our life errors, the first being small and the second being large. A small mistake may be inexpensive, but it's one of the first symptoms of a bigger deal. This is something that I wish I had paid attention to when I was in high school. I wish that I had seen every little mistake as an act of grace, a second chance to change an old habit, instead of a blemish that needed covering up. An attempt to deny these flaws is an unhealthy habit that means not only ignoring the situation at hand, but a lack of ownership and personal responsibility. My perception on this subject was so skewed that it was like wearing a pair of broken glasses. This process of revelation was a battle for me that took 10 years to resolve, if not longer. If I could go back in time and change one thing, then it would have to be my paradigm on this particular struggle. Father Gregory Boyle describes God's love for us in a way that parallels the struggle I had with my parents by saying, "This longing of God's to give us peace and assurance and a sense of well-being only awaits our willingness to cooperate with God's limitless magnanimity." My parents were there for me. I just needed to be able to willingly see that. When I took off my glasses, I saw the people in front of me as a support system, a family that loves me and has my back, instead of some annoying adults that don't understand me. And that was a moment of recognition. Even doing something as simple as changing my thought process to, "I have to defend my reasoning," to, "What could I have done differently in that situation?" would have saved me hours of arguing with my family. That was a personal frame of mind that I needed to change on my own. Not surprisingly, it's incredibly difficult to convince someone that your logic is sound while advocating for personal perfection. It is more important to understand than to be understood. Why? Because you must understand the situation at hand to make the right choice. But people don't need to know that you're being a good person in order for you to be a good person. In other words, their knowledge of the situation doesn't hinder your capabilities of doing the right thing. Coming to terms with this notion was most definitely a moment of revelation for me, and most definitely a process of growth and acceptance. Today, I am grateful that my body and spirit are capable of going through constant states of revelation. I am content with the fact that my eyes have yet to be opened, veils yet to be released, and I am aware that revelation is a process, just as life and faith are processes. Because both call us to go through the motions and hope for the best. May we value every moment of it and all that good stuff. Thank you.